and welcome to Como Explained. It's a podcast from the KBIA newsroom that takes some of the thorny issues and politics that affect our community and breaks them down. I'm Scott Pham, the digital content director here at KBIA. My co-host is Ryan Famuliner, the assistant director of the newsroom. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Scott. Thanks for asking. How about you? How are you doing?
I'm great.
The tables on you.
I'm great. I'm great because today we're talking about a topic that we've wanted to do for a long time. Before this podcast, really, we could just never figure out a way or really an excuse to talk about it.
Right. A few things. We'll start with the conversation about the lieutenant governor's office.
It's a weird office, and we want to explain why this office exists and what it does.
Right. And you probably heard about it in Missouri. Obviously, you should have known if you voted ever that you probably had to vote on the lieutenant governor, unless you abstained, I guess. But yeah, what the heck is that? And then also, one of the real motivations for this, a character we're going to introduce you today, his name is Mike Carter, we spoke with him, and it's somebody you probably don't know yet that you'll really be happy to know after today.
Yeah,
I'll give you that promise right now.
Sure. Yeah, he ran for the lieutenant governor's office in 2012. It was a really bizarre, very strange campaign, at times kind of hilarious, at times very confusing. Most of you listeners never heard of this guy because basically he was just inundating media with press releases. We ignored most of them because we couldn't understand them.
We'll get to that here in a bit. But first, we wanted to update a couple things, right?
Yeah, I wanted to update a couple of things. Every now and then we get some emails after we do a show. Not as often as we'd like. Hint, hint, the listeners. We could use some emails. But every now and then we'll get some emails. And recently, a few weeks ago, I did a show with guest host Abby Fentress Swanson when Ryan was on vacation and left us. And
constant shaming for this. I'll never leave again.
You left us struggling without you. We did this show. We got some criticism. We're gonna own up to it. It wasn't so bad. But basically, the show was all about Columbia drinking water, why it tastes the way it does. In my opinion, not very good, and how the whole water treatment system works. In that show, at least in the written post, I said chloramine is the chemical of choice for disinfection. So basically, in water treatment, after it goes through a filtration system and a few other things, before it goes out into the system and goes into the pipes where it eventually finds itself in your faucet, it gets disinfected to keep it from picking up bacteria along the way. It's true that chloramine is the chemical of choice for Columbia. It's not the chemical of choice for everybody. Traditionally, chlorine was the chemical they used. I was a little fast and loose with those two chemicals. They're different chemicals. And apparently there are people out there that believe that chloramine might have some kind of adverse health effects in some people. The writer, Jeff Hole, who follows these issues, told me that there's not actually any scientific studies that show whether chloramine in drinking water can cause these health effects. But there are people that say that their symptoms get better when they stop drinking chloraminated tap water, and it gets worse when they don't. So, and then there's some other issues. Chloramine reacts differently with other chemicals in the water, and then you have to throw some more chemicals in there to get rid of those byproducts that chloramine makes. So it's actually in some ways more complicated than chlorine, kind of a weaker disinfectant. I don't think it's assumed by everybody that it's the very best disinfectant choice we have.
Okay. So thanks, Scott. Thank you very much for being transparent and letting people know that, you know what, I'm loose and fast too often, right? Basically is what you're saying
Not all the time. I want to say too often, but sometimes, yeah. Sometimes we get a little carried away here.
Nah, I don't think so, but if we inadvertently do, we'll clear it up for you later.
Yeah, we'll clear it up. We'll bring you the facts. So anyways, that was a really good episode, actually, aside from that one little bit. You guys should check it out on iTunes.
Yeah.
One other update. Last week, we talked about self-defense, and that was an interesting episode.
Yeah, and we kept saying constantly, like, based on different interpretations of the law, you have to wait and see until these things are actually tried in court. And then, voila, all of a sudden, this really interesting case happens last weekend. Tragic case.
So basically, there was this family that was floating down the Merrimack River a couple weekends ago. And while they were floating, they decided to pull off to a gravel sandbar to take a leak.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like they were having a pretty typical – if you've ever been on a float trip in Missouri, it's something – being a Missourian, I've done all my life. Those that are of age go and have a few beverages. You stop every now and then. You're talking. You're eating lunch. People have to use the facilities that aren't there, so they have to go out and take a whiz, like you said. And so they stop on this one – shut up. That's what you call it when you're a little kid.
12.
Right? Take a whiz.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
So you go take a, so this guy stop. There are a few people going to take a whiz, and they happen to stop on basically the wrong sandbar.
Right? Yeah, the guy that lives right by that sandbar, he has to deal every summer with people coming up to a sandbar and peeing all over it and being in his backyard.
Right.
And
walking up, maybe onto his property at some
yeah,
cases.
So yeah, so he believes his property extends right down to the river. So he came down there with that belief. He walked down into basically his backyard with a gun in hand, starts firing off warning shots.
Right. And unfortunately, the situation escalated. The group kind of started jawing back at the guy. There was even a member of the group that started walking toward the man with the gun. One of them was holding a rock, and the man ended up firing and shooting someone. Actually, someone who, from what we can tell, appears to have been trying to control the situation, separate the two men. He ends up shooting the person that's closest to him and kills him right there.
Right. So it sounds like it was the father that was walking up close to James Crocker, the man who owns this property. So the father of the family walks up close to him, tries to calm him down. The stepson in the family, a little farther away, picks up some rocks. The Crocker shoots the father in the face and
Paul,
kills him.
Paul Franklin Dart, 48-year-old from Robertsville. So again, very tragic story. But the fact that, but then that self-defense and that castle doctrine stuff comes into play, because you mentioned this guy considers this his property, and there actually is a really interesting set of laws that has to relate to rivers and property like this that back up to waterways.
Right. There's a number of confusing things going on here. One of them is, does he own this land? Is this his castle per se? Are these people actually trespassing? That's all really the same question there, but it's a little complicated. The second is, assuming that it is his land, did Crocker have the right to shoot people that are on it?
Yeah, based on how it all played out.
So I called up Frank Bowman, who you had on Intersection a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, when we talked about these laws and the Zimmerman case, the George Zimmerman case out of Florida. And so he's a great resource on these laws, follows him really closely, and knew about this case already.
Yeah, exactly. He's a professor of law in the University of Missouri, and this is how he broke it down.
You know, if you come onto my lawn, yes, that's my private property, but the law doesn't allow me to come out, you know, carrying a shotgun and essentially say, get off my lawn or I'm going to blow you away. Sorry, that's not the way it works. I think he's going to have a very tough time invoking self-defense on any one of a whole variety of grounds. One,
right,
property probably, while technically privately his, is also probably under state law sort of property from which he had no right to exclude voters, so he doesn't get to use the stand your ground provisions of the law at all. Second of all, he shoots the wrong guy. And third of all, you know, he doesn't get to invoke self-defense at all because he was the initial aggressor by bringing a weapon to what should have been simply a polite discussion about the fact that people were on his gravel bar.
Yeah, we wondered, you and I, right, we wondered if this is going to be one of those key tests of the law. And Bowman thinks it's not going to be. It is going to be a test because he points out that what other defense does this guy have for shooting somebody on his property? He will claim self-defense most likely when this goes to court. Bowman doesn't think he'll be very successful.
Yeah, but it will be an interesting test. We'll see what judges think, what juries think if they go ahead and go through with this. So keep an eye on this one and see what happens.
Okay, let's get back to the real show now, what we've been trying to talk about this whole time, which
finally,
the lieutenant governor. What is that position? Why do we have it?
Okay, the lieutenant governor's office is the second highest position in the state under the governor, right? So if you voted in 2012, you would have seen that looking down the ballot. first office governor, second office lieutenant governor. They're elected separately in Missouri, which is not always the case. In many other states, they may actually run as a ticket or may be appointed by a governor. But the lieutenant governor is next down the line. One of the official duties of it is being, you know, the whole heartbeat away from the governorship.
Yep, being alive.
Being alive in case the other person is not alive. Or also you'll fill in when the governor's gone is one of the other things that
that actually
you can
is
do.
Two out of three of the constitutional powers given to the lieutenant governor.
Right. So you're basically a warm body. But then the other thing that you are is technically the president of the Senate in the state. Okay, but that is also relatively ceremonial.
It's basically ceremonial because we also have a president pro tem of the Senate, and that's the guy that does the real administrative tasks of assigning committees,
running the place day to day,
and that position actually has some power. The actual Senate, the actual president of the Senate is a position with very little power.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he can cast the vote that decides in the situation of a tie, which happens rarely, especially now since we've got this veto-proof majority. Plug to an earlier show about the veto-proof majority.
Yeah, but, we did that.
But it's something that doesn't come up very often, but theoretically he could cast a tying vote. He also has the ability to be there for debates in the Senate, not during committees, but when the Senate meets as a whole, he can be there to debate when he wants to.
Yeah.
So basically,
I'm sure that's what he really wants to
do. Yeah. You can't really vote unless it's a situation of breaking a tie. Sometimes he'll be there for ceremonial purposes. He or she will be there for ceremonial purposes, but that's really about it. So yeah, you've got this kind of ceremonial position. You're the warm body. And then there also are some other kind of informal, non-constitutional, but still duties that the lieutenant governor takes on. He's the advocate for the elderly. Is that
right?
Yeah,
it's kind of a weird thing. A lot of other lieutenant governors, South Carolina, for instance, they also had that duty to be the advocate for the elderly. You are advocating for the elderly. You are receiving complaints about elder care.
Yeah, and then you're also on a number of other committees, things like that. Looking at the list here on Peter Kinder's
website.
It's
kind of a long list.
Board of Public Buildings, Board of Fund Commissioners, Missouri Development Finance Board, a bunch of stuff like that.
Yeah, mostly having to do with economic development, a little bit having to do with veterans issues.
Right, right. So, and Tourism Commission, things like that. So in the past, lieutenant governors have created like the Tour Day Missouri, this old bike race that used to be in Missouri that eventually has gone away. So there are some things that you can actually make happen, but there's nothing you have to make happen.
It's a weird position, and it's worth noting that not every state has them because it's obviously so unnecessary to the working of government that you can actually do without them.
Yeah.
So there's 7 states that don't have one at all, and in 25 states, full half of the nation, you elect them as a ticket, the way you just mentioned.
Right.
And in some other states, they find some ways of actually empowering the lieutenant governor, making it useful. For instance, in Texas, the lieutenant governor has a lot of powers that the president pro tem has.
Here,
so,
in Missouri.
Yeah, exactly. So he's kind of more of a creature of the Senate there, and he has some kind of legislative sway.
Right. And where now he's just this kind of, again, warm body in the executive branch. That's really all it is in Missouri, to be honest. And I think many lieutenant governor candidates say that. Again, Susan Monti was basically saying, well, I'll try to make it more than that. But legislatively or, you know, like constitutionally and through state law, you don't have a lot of ways to actually do that. Again, to not have a lot, you don't have a lot of real, as you say, I say so it goes type power. So,
right.
So that's the lieutenant governorship for you in a nutshell. So how's it working right now? Peter Kinder is the current lieutenant governor, if you're not familiar with him.
Second time around.
So he ran he was in office for 4 years. In 2012, elections were coming up. And actually, people thought he wasn't going to run for lieutenant governor again. People thought he was probably going to run for governor because that's usually how things work with a lieutenant governor. And a lot of these statewide ballot, the statewide offices, people run for them to get this kind of name recognition, get their name out there, especially those that have aspirations for moving higher, moving to the House of Representatives, the Senate, whatever. They get out and get their name in these positions, right, for a few years. And that's what everybody thought was going to happen with him. He was going to rise up the ranks, right? So what happened?
Well, what happened was that Kinder screwed up.
how so?
So there are two big scandals. Let's talk about the smaller one first.
While he was running for office, or he went to a bar and took a photo with a woman that was working at the bar at the restaurant there in St. Louis. And it turned out she used to be a stripper, and she came and started talking to the radio stations and saying, oh, I used to see him all the time when I was a stripper.
Yeah, they had a relationship of some kind.
Yeah, and then she said she felt threatened by him, yada, yada, yada. So it ended up being a big scandal. But this was after there was already another scandal. This was
right.
like a personal
life
thing.
So I'm calling
this
one the smaller scandal, because I don't think it actually had that much of an effect compared to this bigger scandal.
Yeah, this is more of a personal life, it's in the past kind of thing, but still something that everybody went, ugh. But he already had this other thing that people were already worried about, right?
Yeah, and this is something we've talked about on the show before, because it was a cool instance of investigative reporting, actually kind of digging up facts, digging up facts that had an effect on government.
Right, right. And so he had been spending a lot of money, taxpayer money, on travel expenses. It seemed like they were definitely much more – they were spending a lot more than he needed to. He was spending 1 or 2 days a week in hotels in St. Louis. There was a lot of question about whether some of this activity while he was at these places, he was actually doing campaign-type work instead of duties of the office, which, again, what the heck are the duties of the office?
Yeah, it's very hard to defend the tens of thousands of dollars he was spending on travel when the job has so few duties.
Right. And so there was a lot of hubbub about it, of course. And then eventually he came out, made a statement and said, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and reimburse the state for these expenses. I don't think anything I was doing was wrong. I'm not admitting guilt, but I am going to reimburse the state through campaign funds or whatever. And so that way this will go away. That was his plan, was that this would go away. But it obviously created a ton of negative press about him. It got that name recognition for the wrong reasons, at least from his viewpoint. All of a sudden, party leaders are saying, whoa, maybe we don't want this guy running for governor.
Yeah, so he ran again for lieutenant governor, which is kind of amazing in itself. But obviously, he was vulnerable. Obviously, he was not as strong of a candidate for that position as he was the time before. So all of a sudden, the lieutenant governor's race gets a lot more interesting. We started getting big names in there, and we get a big ballot.
Yeah, Brad Lager comes in and wants to run for this as well.
He challenges Kinder in the Republican primary.
Yeah, he's a pretty well-known name at the state legislator level, and you know, he's somebody who has aspirations well beyond the state legislature, and probably rightfully so, I would say. Somebody who has a chance to rise up the ranks. And that's what the lieutenant governor position is often used for, right? We talked about it. So many of them end up being governors or moving to higher office.
Yeah, Brad Lager was a real credible threat to Kinder.
Right. And that was the primary level, right? That's him running against Kinder before we even go to the ticket. Those are two Republicans butting heads, which usually with an incumbent situation, you wouldn't put up another really viable candidate. You put him in a different office. You want him to be Secretary of State or something like that against another strong Democratic candidate there.
Right.
Right.
But there was somebody else running the Republican primary, and he didn't get a lot of the vote. I don't think anybody really considered him a very viable, credible candidate, but we're going to talk about him today.
Yeah, I don't know if he would have even considered himself a viable candidate, but he still darn well tried. So Mike Carter, we talked about him briefly at the beginning of the show, and his campaign had dumbfounded me when I saw it happening in real time back then, and I couldn't quite figure out what it was. I didn't spend the time on it because we were too busy covering all the other races, but I wanted to figure out what the heck it was all about, and it turns out it was really, really interesting to fit into this conversation we're having about what the lieutenant governor really does and what the office means. Okay, so first off, Mike Carter, currently he is a lawyer in the St. Louis area, Wentzville area, handles a lot of like DUI and ticket cases, things like that. And he also has, at one point in his career, was a judge. And he also ran for judge again this last April, didn't win, but he was a judge, a municipal judge in the Wentzville area a few years ago as well. And then he's also run for these other offices.
He's also got a funny little side business.
Yeah.
It's called St. Louis Time and Temperature.
Oh, yeah. I think we're going to.
Yeah, I'm going to try to do it. We'll see how this works. I'm going to call this number right now, St. Louis Time and Temperature.
Beep, boop, boop, beep.
Good evening.
So wait, what did you just call?
Here's the reason why we're actually called this
time. 5, 11. Temperature, 73. Today's high was 76.
Nice.
From the
cool.
National Weather yeah, Service Internet Weather Source. Tonight's weather forecast.
Okay, that's it.
All right. So, yeah. What the heck? What were we recalling? What were we calling there?
That's St. Louis time and temperature.
That's the time and temperature number.
Right. Because for some reason, back before people had smartphones, if you wanted to, you could call up this phone number and an automated voice would give you the time and the temperature.
Yes. And there's probably – yeah, your grandma probably used to do this. How about that? And so, yeah, I think the number went defunct, I'm pretty sure, at one point. But then Mike Carter saw opportunity and went –
brought it back.
And got that number, right? And
yeah.
Brought it back. And so people still dial in, but they want to get that thing that we heard at the end, but instead they get – that song. What was that? He was talking about 45bucks.com.
45bucks.com.
Yeah.
So these two enterprises that Mike Carter runs, one of them, St. Louis Time and Temperature, definitely a side business. It can't possibly make too much. But it's a nice little ad platform for 45bucks.com and digiblow.com, his DWI services websites.
Right. Like, if you're thinking logically about how this works, that must be the reason he's doing this, is try to get his word out about his site. Obviously, people that are calling in for there don't want to listen to that rap music. He's even put out press releases, which we still got another press release from recently on this, talking about how people are upset about it. He seemed almost amused by it, I guess.
Yeah, he did. He's a guy where any kind of press he gets, I don't think it really enters his mind, is this good press, is this bad press? I think what he thinks is my name in it? And then he thinks, awesome.
Right. And it's any press is good press, which usually politicians would think the opposite. But that's why it's really interesting. Moving on to why we're talking about him in lieutenant governor in the first place is because he's run for lieutenant governor in the last two elections, in 2012 and 2008. So in 2008, he ran for lieutenant governor as a Democrat. And actually, he did pretty well in the primary for a relative unknown. He got 16.3% of the vote. The winner, Sam Page, got 40% of the vote, and there were six candidates in that race. So he did pretty good. So how did he do that well?
Yeah. So he has this phone service. It gets a lot of incoming calls, and he pays for that bandwidth, but he makes so few outgoing calls. So I guess he thought to himself, I could hook up a machine to that, make a bunch of outgoing calls, spend next to no money, maybe actually no money, send out thousands and thousands of robocalls.
Right. And that's basically all he did. He said that he ran that campaign from his couch. When I talked to him today, and we'll hear from him again here in a bit, he ran that campaign from his couch and he got 16% of the vote. So that kind of encouraged him, right? And said, hey, I wonder how many votes I can get without really spending any money. And he says part of his rationale for this is that he says, when you're spending a lot of money on a campaign, you're also then obligated to serve that money, right? So one of his higher calling reasons for this is that you could actually get into office and not owe a bunch of favors when you get there. But he actually says, part of why did he run for lieutenant governor in the first place? Why did he get the idea to do this? He actually had run for a judgeship before, that Wentzville one that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And he said he targeted it with the same idea in mind. How can I run for this how can I find an office to run for, spend next to no money, and get elected? And he actually was able to do that in Wentzville using the same thing, using robocalls. And just trying to get some name recognition. He didn't have all these campaigns, didn't have campaign events, donors, anything like that. He just got name recognition and he actually got elected. So then he started thinking, where can I find another office like this? It's a little better that people don't really care about that much, that if they just put my name in their head, they might vote for me. And he saw the lieutenant governor's office. Because when you get right down to it, His contention is people just don't care about the lieutenant governor's
office. No, they don't care about it. They don't understand why it's there. It's what he calls a down ballot race, a race that's down there at the very bottom of the ballot. By the time you get down there, maybe you can barely remember who these names are. You're a little bit tired of voting to begin with. You might just check off the name that you recognize the most.
Right. And so that's why – do we have one of his robocalls we could play, actually?
Yeah, we have one of his robocalls.
One of his robocalls serves that goal, at least attempts to.
This is Mike Carter for Lieutenant Governor, inviting you to MikeCarter.com. I'm a Ron Paul-style candidate. Check that out at MikeCarter.com, paid for by Mike Carter. And you can opt out of any future calls at MikeCarter.com.
What was his name?
I think it was Mike something.
Mike something.
Five name drops.
basically, he has a robot call you up on the weekends and just shout his name at you over and over.
Right. And so, in 2012, he decided to do the same thing. This time he decides to run as a Republican. I think maybe he saw that this opportunity that Kinder was not wasn't a very strong candidate, and he thought, well, hey, this is a really weak candidate. I can go for it. Democrats will probably put up somebody good, so I'll go for it. This is before Lager had announced that he was going to run. And so he went ahead and declared he was going to run for office. And he said he's going to do the same thing. He's just going to send out robocalls and maybe send out some emails, because that's not that hard, right?
No, it's not so hard.
So he got his brother to run his campaign and send out some emails. Yeah. And this is where he came into our consciousness.
This is where you know, I have a cell phone. You have a cell phone. We're not getting these robocalls. but we are getting his emails about the robocalls.
Right. That's the funny thing. Robocalls are something that people don't like when politicians use robocalls anymore. Many of them have created these no-call lists, are proud of that, whereas Mike Carter would actually send us press releases. The reason we can listen to that is because he sent us a press release with a link to it.
A little link to the robocall. It's very strange. And this is one of the amazing things about Mike Carter, right? He takes something that might be considered a dirty tactic, something that might be considered a slimy, scammy thing to do. And not only does he make that the center of his strategy, but he brags about it.
Yeah, he went ahead and just said, yeah, I'm going to do this. But he says it worked pretty well last time. I got 16% of the vote purely doing this. But in the meantime, he's also being pretty transparent about his thoughts about the office. He's saying that, you know what, the lieutenant governor's office doesn't really do anything. Nobody cares about this office. He's saying this in the press releases. We have these press releases. We actually have turned them all into a PDF and saved them on our website. We'll go over some of the stuff that's in it, because there's a piece of gold in every one of these press releases.
Yeah, I save them as emails because I want you to kind of get the same experience that I got, which is a mixture of confusion and joy. Because, just to be honest, they're hilarious.
They are
the
really
strangest
funny
things.
Sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally. But they're very, very funny. I mean, my unintentional example is that in the first email we ever got from him, the headline said, Lieutenant Governor Mike Carter is running for office.
Which, very confusing.
Which is very confusing, because he wasn't Lieutenant Governor. He was a candidate for Lieutenant Governor.
This is like June.
Yeah, he's again the first one to declare for the race, other than of course Peter Kinder, who was going to run again. Case in point, there's some weird things going on. We're always kind of scratching our head, but there's also some intentional stuff, right? One of my favorite ones is when he was just announcing his robocalls, right? One of my favorite pieces of text there is that he says, "I'm very excited about these calls today. They start in 10 minutes." And then he says, every pundit should be curious about my push for office. Kinder and Lager are slinging poo, and I'm the only one with the baby wipes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
this is an amazing thing, because it's like it almost makes you want to write about it. It almost makes you want to put him on the radio, but you don't have no good reason, right? You know, but he's very sensitive to this. He knows that he's the underdog. He knows it's really hard to get media attention. He's very thoughtful about it, but in some ways he's throwing things at a wall, seeing what sticks.
Trying to get some attention. Because he sees this possibility of getting these votes from robocalls, but he realizes that's not enough to get elected, right? So how else? Free things are there out there for him, if he doesn't want to spend any money, that could get him some attention? Scott, it's you and I.
Yeah.
It's the media. It's people out there who can give us this free media coverage. So
we didn't give it to him.
No, we didn't give it to him. But there was one example that kind of just encapsulized everything he was trying to do, Scott. I think you've got it there, the email.
Yeah,
there
I'm sorry you've been hearing me. I've been pulling through these press releases, but it's a little difficult to understand, so you're going to have to stay with me for a moment here. So he starts this campaign where he wants to give $1,000 to somebody over Christmas, inspired by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch's 100 Neediest Cases series. So he's going to find a needy family, give them $1,000 of his own money. But he wants the media to elect those people. So he basically wants us to promote a contest that he's running and attach his name to it. He wants us to go on the radio and say, Carter, voteforcarter.com wants you to nominate your most needy family that you know, or maybe yourself, and then Carter will give you money.
Right. And one of the key components is that the media, a member of the media, has to tell him who the family is.
Yeah.
Okay? Which, from a journalistic standpoint, is a real ethical conundrum, right? Because I'm not really sure how I'm supposed to handle that, because I can't be part of the story. But that was one of the contingencies, is that we had to be the ones to actually tell
Many problems with it. It's like, yeah. I mean, also, like, if it, even if he wasn't a candidate, we're running a contest for somebody. There's like legal things with that. I don't think we could just do that.
I actually asked him about it. Why don't we play the clip on what he said?
So I was just trying to think outside the box as a journalism, you know, master's in journalism guy. What would be a way to get maybe reverse the relationship to where they wanted to get a hold of me and would look like buttheads if they didn't, you know, try to put some responsibility on them, you know, hey, I'm not giving this donation at Christmas time to these people unless you get a hold of me. And
and they is the media. They is a journalist out there who wasn't giving him his free coverage that he wants. So it looked like he was going to pony up $1,000, but he wasn't ponying it up. He was giving it to somebody in need.
Thing that I don't understand is I don't understand how we look like buttheads unless people know that Carter is trying to make this happen. It's also just too confusing for people to understand.
And he made robocalls getting people to do it as well. That was the other thing. He sent robocalls to use his robocall function to tell people to tell journalists. So it was getting very meta. He was – because he ultimately wants us to get to the people, but he was going to the people to get to us to get to us to get to the people.
It's a little bit inscrutable. I'm glad you talked to Carter –
to try to get to the bottom of it, which was exactly what we thought it was.
Yeah.
I mean, there were lots of times. I ultimately asked him a couple times, like, were you joking with some of the stuff? And he's like, yeah, I'm just trying stuff. I'm just trying things. Another thing he tried that was kind of funny, he was talking about having debates, right? But the interesting thing about the debate that he wanted is that he said, we should do it 1800 style, colonial
1800
style.
1800 style. What in the world does that mean,
that means Ryan? That means that he wants everybody to sweat. He wants everybody to sit in the no air conditioning, Lincoln Douglas type stuff, he says. A Lincoln Douglas type affair. He also said in the press release he'd like to invite someone like the guy from 97.1 FM St. Louis Talk Radio to moderate a 2 to 4 hour debate.
He couldn't look up the guy's name.
No, someone like – that's a quote. And again, he's just having fun with this stuff. He really is. He's just trying to – he's trying to generate some attention, and that's really what it comes down to. But I actually asked him about this too. Why don't we listen to what he had to say about why he decided to throw this out there.
What struck me is one of the ladies running, just candidly, like Judy Baker, I can't remember, but there was some article about her being pretty and all this, which I'm not. But I knew I don't wear makeup or anything. And we had done a tour with my kids' Boy Scout troop through the original state capitol, and one of the themes of it is people were up here, and it was 135 degrees in this room, and it really was like 110 the day we were there. It doesn't have air conditioning or anything. And I thought, wouldn't it be neat to see all the pretty people, you know, possibly looking just as ugly as me, sweating it out over a two-hour debate? And I don't know. It was dumb, but I tried it.
Yeah, it was an idea.
It was dumb, but I tried it. It seems like that was kind of his laughing aside almost every time he told these stories. But he was just trying stuff. He was just trying to get attention, again, from the context that it should be free. But why? So when it comes back to it, why on earth would he do this with the lieutenant governor's office, right? But it's really because, as we said before, he just saw this as an opportunity. It's something people really don't care about, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's something that people don't care about. It's something that maybe – how much does he care about? You know, that's one of the questions we had. Does he actually want to win? Because there's – you know, in May of 2012, before this weird summer heat thing, he sends out this press release where – that his brother, Chad Carter, wrote. It says, Carter's most powerful ally is the fact that he doesn't care if he wins. One thing that we wondered before we ever actually gave Mike Carter a call and talked to him is we wondered if, like, is this actually a really brilliant campaign? Is this actually, like, some kind of, like, public art?
Yeah, like Andy Kaufman type stuff, yeah. Right? Where he's just having fun with us as a farce.
Yeah.
And I think... you know, in my opinion, it is still a little bit of a farce. It might not be an intentional farce.
Yeah, I don't think he meant to, but it's – yeah, he's calling attention to this ridiculous system where you have a job that has so little impact, so little importance, that people like Mike Carter with nothing but essentially an open phone line is able to come and make at least a little bit of an impact.
The other scary thing about this is that we asked him at the end, you know, are you going to run again? He said, yeah, I'm going to run again. He's not declaring, so don't go print that. But most likely he's going to do it again because it takes no investment and a little bit of time. But we also asked him, you know, what would you do different? Or what do you think this could ever actually work? And here's what he said to that.
Yeah, I've met – I don't know it to be true. I've met a couple people like-minded who have won other campaigns through the traditional methods, who theorized that if he had about $100,000 spent perfectly, that you could win a lieutenant governor's raise or something, which would be a fraction of what they normally raise.
Right. So if Mike Carter, if he had $100,000
spent perfectly,
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that would buy the race, but he would certainly – I mean, we saw him spend nothing and get 8%.
And get 8% against two really viable candidates.
With a lot of money.
So, and again, 17%. If he's just going around and looking for the most the weakest position to run against, you know, I think, again, that's likely why he targeted Kinder, because he was a weak candidate. But yeah, he's just looking for the opportunity, right? He's really scheming when you get right down to it. And he's transparent about the fact that he's scheming, which what else would you expect from a guy who plays his promo to get to his website, 45bucks.com, when you're trying to call to get the time and temperature. So I don't know. I guess if there's a schemer out there with $100,000 who knows how to spend their money well, they could be our next lieutenant governor.
You think that does it?
I think that does it. There's so much more I could say about Mike Carter, but I'm going to let you discover it for yourself.
Yeah, we'll put the gold up on the website. We'll put the funny stuff up on the website. We'll maybe put up some audio clips there too. Hear the 45bucks.com song. Rap with your friends.
There's also a didyoublow.com song as
well. There's a didyoublow.com song. Yeah. Hey, we got through this whole podcast without touching that joke.
I know. We'll leave that for you. I think that is it.
Okay. So that's going to do it for Como Explained. I am Scott Pham. My co-host is Ryan Famuliner. We're going to remind you again that we are on iTunes. We're easy to find. Search for Como Explained on the iTunes store to subscribe and get a brand new podcast in your possession each and every Wednesday. If you really like us, leave us a comment there. It means a great deal to us. It helps people find the podcast. Email us at news@kbia.org. Tweet us @KBIA. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.